Welcome to CougarCast with Keith Schertz and Tosh McIntosh.
CougarCast,
covering BYU football and basketball. Email the show, cougarcast@gmail.com, and follow on Twitter at CougarCast. See what the guys have to say on Cougar Board.
Find them at 4Mac and CougarCast.
What is up? My name is Keith Schertz, and I am here with the 2002 Daily Herald Utah County Name of the Year, Tosh McIntosh. Tosh, BYU gets a couple wins last week. Carlino had a nice week. Anson Winder had a nice week.
We're right where we need to be. Like, I have a smile on my face as a BYU basketball fan, and that we control our own destiny at this point, and we're right there to grab the tournament berth.
On the verge of our highest finish in conference ever.
Which is sad, but true.
No, I mean, listen, they're playing better down the stretch. You always wanted things to go better down the stretch. And, you know, Carlino got super hot against Portland. And he's always good for one or two of those games every year.
Yep. And that was it. I know this drives a lot of the current fans like wild, but I loved that game. But to be honest, I came away from that game thinking, I hope he doesn't think he should shoot 13 threes next game.
That being said, he has improved his three-point shooting percentage. I got looking at it today. I was surprised to see it at 36% on the year.
Yeah, I mean, 8 for 13 when you're... That will do that. But 36, it's still not amazing.
It's still better than what anybody shot on the team last year outside of Craig Cusick. So
yeah, no, it's an improvement. I don't want to be critical of him. He's played great since moving to the bench, and last game it was fun. As long as we get the Carlino that we've got for the last 3 weeks, then I really like our chances going forward to finish this year out.
Facilitating Carlino is always going to be better, right? But yeah, if he can hit some shots, I'll tell you what. If Matt Carlino has a good game, it's really tough to beat BYU.
Very true. As long as it's percentage wise, he has a good game.
And then, of course, let's talk about Gonzaga. Anson Winder, I think he had, 17 points in that game on 4 shots?
They're just awesome. he's my player of the week. Like,
that's who I think, too. But Carlino had a really nice week as well. No,
exactly. Those are the two it's between. But Anson was incredibly efficient. And he gives... Carlino's great on defense, too. But, I mean, Anson was in the game for his defense.
Right.
And then just gave us, in both games, a big boost offensively, getting guys in foul trouble. The saving grace that we needed all year is someone that would go to the line not named Tyler that could hit free throws.
Mm-hmm. No, and that was gigantic. I mean, Anson Winder, if you take a look at it, I'm just going to add this up real quick. Yeah, he's made 14 in a row from the stripe.
Yeah.
Woo!
And they look good. He just goes up there and does his John Stockton form of throwing it over the shoulder, but it goes in every time, and I've loved it.
No, and I the other one is gosh, the meltdown I saw when we were playing Gonzaga, and Eric Mika was on the bench as well. Does that make sense? They made 2 changes to our starting lineup.
Yeah.
And started Sharp instead of Mika and Winder instead of Halford. And I actually, you know, it worked perfect, right? I mean, Sharp came in. I think he had a couple rebounds, a couple block shots, and a couple fouls in the first 2 minutes of that game. You know, we mentioned it earlier in the year. I know this is something that Mark Durant's talked about if you listen to KSL broadcast. But, you know, big guys are more vulnerable to fouls early in games. And it's clear that when you have an inside presence and can go inside out, and be able to do that, you're going to spread the floor and give yourself a better chance from three.
Yeah. So, and here's what I think is going on, is that no matter what level of basketball, the refs try to set the tone early.
Right.
That, hey, we're going to call that. Let's try to not let the game get out of hand. Let's set the tone early. They call touchy, quick fouls to set the tone. Let's have let's have our big guy, who we're not very deep with bigs, let's have him on the bench while they get those fouls out of the way.
Exactly.
Put him in, let him do it.
And then they did, against Portland, they started Luke Worthington instead.
And both those guys played well, like Worthington and Sharp, for what they're expected to do. I was happy with both those guys.
All right, so home stand is over. Big win against Gonzaga. The best part about the Gonzaga game is it was never really that much in doubt. You know, I was tied at halftime, but BYU looked better. You know, the last 5 minutes of that first half were disastrous. But, you know, Cougars came out and did what they needed to do, and then kind of were up by six from, like, the 14-minute mark in that game to, like, the 4-minute mark of that game.
Yep.
It was driving me nuts. They couldn't get past six.
But right? I mean, Gonzaga's a good team, and we controlled it. I'm higher as a fan now on this team than I have at any point in the season. Which to be feeling this way at this point at the end of the season, I think is a fun place to be.
Peaking at the right time.
We are.
Oh, it's a wonderful thing. All right, so you have the Cougars then come out with two wins. We got a big game at San Diego. San Diego's had its struggles this year, but I think there's a healthy dose of fear within every BYU fan about the Toreros.
There should be. I mean, they have 16 wins. They're not a slouch, and they just – in their last game they played, they beat the Bulldogs just like we did. So, right. I mean, they know what they're doing. And they
look fearless. They look like they knew what they were doing. And then Mr. Johnny D with the bright blue shoes, you know, showing off what he was doing against Gonzaga.
They've got two guys that can just stroke it from three. And that's been our Achilles heel all year. Hopefully Anson really has solved that problem like it appears. But this game makes me nervous.
Also, can I – something – I don't really feel people are talking about, but, you know, Haas is playing good defense.
Yes. And oddly, his
offense
has gone –
nobody's noticing that, but Haas is playing good
defense. Dropped a little bit, but his defense has been great. Like, I think this something must have happened practice-wise where they are hitting, guarding the perimeter at a whole different level.
Well, closeouts are so much better. They're not jumping anymore. They're doing the right thing on closeouts. So that's one of the bigger things there. Let's talk San Diego. Kramer, obviously, is their guy that does some rebounding. He does some rebounding for him. He's a tough guy down there. But again, you know, you manage those fouls, you get those big guys in there, and we play physical underneath. You know, I think we're going to be able to rebound relatively well against this San Diego team the way that we did in the first game against San Diego. The question is can we do enough to slow down sort of the irrational confidence that can be found, you know, amongst Johnny D and you know, Anderson, you know, there are other guys that like to shoot deep and shoot a lot of threes and stuff like that.
Because really, this game is huge in my mind, in that if we win, I think we're in the tournament. I think we'll be in at large. If we lose, then I think have to win the WCC tournament. So, like, I think as fans, it's like, oh, it's just San Diego. But we can't – I mean, this is a must-win for this season to be a success in my eyes.
All right. This brings me to another thing that I wanted to talk to you about. I was talking to my dad on the phone, and I don't know what you talked to your dad about. But, we just talk sports, basically. And anyway, one of the things that he was saying is he's like, you know, I take a look, and I've been watching West Coast Conference games. And he goes, and I think the quality of his – is good, and I saw like conference RPI ratings and stuff, and saw that the West Coast Conference was higher than the Mountain West Conference, and yet I don't feel as accomplished when we go and get a win at San Francisco or when we go and play San Diego. I don't have the feeling inside of me the way I did when it was like, well, it's time to go play at the Pit.
It's
true. Or we're gonna go play UNLV or even Air Force sometimes. Clune Arena used to be pretty tough, or even Wyoming from time to time. And of course San Diego State.
And UNLV.
And of course San Diego State. So, yeah. But the point is like, that being said though, the numbers and the competition and all that stuff, they say that the West Coast Conference has been a tougher league this year. Just barely.
On the buzz factor, I 100% agree. The only wins in our conference that give us that are St. Mary's and Gonzaga, of course, but the other teams are just as good as I think the New Mexico's, the UNLV's as of late.
But San Francisco is a better team than St. Mary's this year.
Agreed. I totally agree. But like nationally, and then even as a fan base, like,
yeah,
like, it's not, we didn't sell out or have a rowdy crowd when San Francisco came to town, but St. Mary's.
Yeah.
It's like, we know, hey, these guys, okay, for whatever reason.
Hang on. West Coast Conference hate rankings. Okay.
From our sports perspective.
For you personally. Okay. From you personally. Who's your most hated West Coast Conference opponent?
St. Mary's.
St. Mary's.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? Number two. I've gotten to that. I don't like San Francisco.
Yeah, I mean, you could. I think that that's up there. I would even go. Yeah, I'd probably go San Francisco.
I'll tell you what, San Diego is starting to be something, but it's about there though, right? I mean, past that, it's like, you know, like, who do I have the most apathy towards? Probably Santa Clara. I don't know.
Yeah, oddly enough, I mean, Gonzaga's not even high on that list for me, even though they should be. They're tough, but I.
Is that respect?
It is. They are a classy team with a classy coach, and I do respect them.
Okay. All right. And now I just want to take a minute. I had an inside scoop for the show today.
All right.
And I wanted to surprise you with it. So BYU is working on a scheduling thing for BYU basketball. They're working on a schedule, a series of games. They're having problems getting it to line up. And the reason is because before they schedule this team, they want to hire as an assistant coach for the program, Jan Jorgensen. And the team that they're scheduling is UVU.
No. So we're talking basketball?
Yeah.
Wants to hire Jan Jorgensen?
No. BYU wants to hire Jan Jorgensen.
For basketball.
That's right.
To
get them ready to fight the UVU fans.
Oh, I'm with you now. All right. I was really confused about this whole thing.
It's not a real scoop.
Yeah. Was that crazy that UVU is like nationally known today? And
yeah, so I don't know if you saw my tweets today. So tweet one that I put, I think I was the first one to get to the obvious joke. I don't know if that's, who cares? The bottom line is I said, they need to stop serving Rancheritos at the McKay Event Center. And then the second one, though, is for recap, there's been three times in which UVU has been in the national spotlight. Number one, the whole Michael Moore debacle. Do you know about that?
Well, he came and spoke there. Right. I don't know much more than that.
It became a huge thing.
Okay.
Because there was so much opposition to him speaking. Number two, the Brian Russell one-on-one against MJ debacle.
So, which wasn't directly UVU, but it was held at their arena.
Yeah. Yeah. They're implicated.
Sure.
And then the third one now, of course, is fighting. So their fans fighting players, you know. And yeah, it was the New Mexico State guy. Like, he shouldn't have thrown the ball at him.
Those guys were punks, but the fans did not represent their school well either.
Yeah, the fans were worse.
Yeah.
In my opinion. But the whole thing that's interesting about that to me is just that, you know, the three times they've been in the spotlight, it's been because, you know, they have like uncomfortableness issues with Michael Moore for whatever reason. The second one is because they like to lie and deceive people. And the third is because they'll fight you. So that's a reputation they're building up there.
UVU. I do poke fun at UVU a little bit, but I feel like as a BYU fan, we shouldn't go too crazy because I think most of their alum are actually BYU fans.
Right. Well, but don't you think they'll jump ship?
At some point.
Yes.
That might be 50 years down the road, though. Like, I think we need to embrace their money and their fandom as we were getting it at this point.
Okay, all right. Well, I think it goes at some point. And so I'm ready to already pick on them a little bit. Just because, you know.
It's easy to – they've made it easy to do.
They have. All right, so back to hoops. So one of the things that I thought – was particularly interesting, Tosh, is I got taken a look at it, and I've been criticized several times on Twitter about being too hard on Carlino, right? As if I'm like wanting him to not succeed. Like that's clearly not the case. Like I want Matt Carlino to do
really I love well. It when he hits threes and hits big shots, like,
right, and I'm happy that he's improving and that things are going better. But to disagree with the way Coach Rose has handled things this year, I think is nuts.
Completely nuts. It has changed Carlino's game in so many ways for the better. of him going to the bench.
He himself has even, you know, said that out loud, that that playing off the bench has been helpful for me. So my thing is, you know, there seems to be a lot more, you know, the hashtag free Carlino, all that other stuff. Like, my whole thing is like, he's playing as many minutes as he was before, and he's being more effective now. And the other thing that it gave is it gave a stronger identity to the team, right? So it kind of – what that did is Rose said, okay, well, we have an identity that we want to accomplish offensively. And that's where we want to go. We want to press the ball, right? And transition is really important to us. But if we're not in transition, then we're working through Tyler Hawes. And if he doesn't have a shot, then maybe somebody else can, can generate one for someone else. The problem was, is through the first 12 games of this year, 9 of those games, the team leader in shots attempted was Matt Carlino. And in that stretch, he was only the highest scorer like once or twice, right?
So if I get you right, he was shooting a lot.
Yes.
But he wasn't scoring a lot in those games.
He was not. So here, I just pulled it up. So for instance, right? Weber State, Carlino had 22 shots. Haas led the team with 28 points, right? Mount St. Mary's, Carlino had 13 shots. Anson Winder led the team 22 points, right? Colorado Mesa, Carlino had 17 shots. Carlino led the team with 16. Iowa State, Carlino, 20 shots. Haas led the team, 20 points. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like Wichita State, 19 shots. Carlino led the team, 21 points. And those are the only two games where he's took the most shots and also led the team in scoring. Against Utah, he took 17. Haas led the team with 21. Against Texas, that was Mika. Mika shot the most.
But even the biggest of Carlino.
But you get what I'm saying is this is like, it clearly, so since being benched, Carlino has only led the team in shots attempted twice, right? So one time was against Pacific, and we lost. And the other time was against Portland, right? Yes.
And he played great. Yeah.
And he played great. So the point is that it doesn't. There seems to be a disconnect. Where if you're shooting the most shots, you should also probably lead the team in scoring, right? Like, seems that way. And it seems like Coach Rose has been able to kind of control sort of the identity of the team on offense by bringing him off the bench like that. And I think it's worked, and I think it's been what the team needed. And that being said, I mean, he's been playing terrific ball, and we absolutely need him to have several big plays and big moments down the stretch for us to make a run. Okay, you have any other thoughts on that?
No, I mean, I say no and then I do. But yes, yes is what I should say.
Yeah.
Is that two thoughts. One, that the numbers back that up. Like, I'm a Carlino fan, but this whole free Carlino, he's getting the short end, that's just ridiculous. He's not an efficient shooter. From the field, from the free throw line,
but he's become way
or
more,
from the 3-point
line.
He's
become way more efficient since
as his shot numbers have gone down. As his percentage, as his usage rate of possessions has gone down, his efficiency's gone up.
Right. So in non-conference, his usage rate was 31%. In conference, it's 21%.
Yeah.
That's night and day.
Totally. And the other thing is that it may have been a key part in helping us to just realize that, hey, Anson should be on the floor. That I'm hoping these last two games weren't just a fluke. But I, from looking at Anson's career, I have always thought he was a player, especially defensively. And him giving us another guard defensively, of him being a guy that can hit free throws.
Right.
That's another huge silver lining to Carlino.
It's really big. And whenever Anson Winder's gotten minutes, he's scored points.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's really simple. That guy's just, he's always had it. He just needed opportunity. And unfortunately, he's been kind of put in the spot behind, you know, Tyler Haas.
And Carlino, which,
right.
Which were, at the start of the year, were like impossible guys to get minutes ahead of, but that's changed. And I think that's been a plus.
Right. Or you go three or four guards out there and try to run that way. Okay. The other one is you know, when you watch a movie and you're busy guessing the end of the movie and what it will be like, mm-hmm. right? You're reading a book and you're trying to figure out how's this thing all going to close out. I think that's something that if I was on the selection committee, that's one of the things that I'd take a look at. So one of the things that we know now, you know, I've been watching this team. I've watched every single game, you know. We know how this is going to play out, don't we? What I mean is whenever they lose to finish their year, right?
Uh-huh.
Like, we don't think they're winning a national championship, right?
True.
Probably not. We also, they might make a run in the NIT again if that's where they end up, but regardless. The demise of this team, right, will come in this form. It'll be found in only one offensive player having a nice game. So against UMass, like Carlino had a nice game, uh-huh. right? But Haas struggled. Or so it'll be one of the guys is really going to struggle, and then we're not going to guard the three.
Yes.
That's it. That's essentially enough to tell you.
All of our losses, that's the pattern it follows.
Right. Right. I mean, and rebounding can be a problem sometimes, but
free throw
shooting. Right. Right. So what I'm saying is you get in the first round of the NCAA tournament game, right? And I can already see in my head, like, oh, this is how this is going to go. Like, Kyle Collinsworth's going to go like 2 for 10 from the field. And, you know, Matt Carlino is going to go 3 for 12. And then Haas will have 25 points. But they're going to go down.
If we lost, that's how it would lose.
Well, right. And so this is what I'm saying is like, I feel like you can already have a really good sense of like how we're going to die, if that makes sense.
Okay.
So play doctor for a minute.
How do you fix that?
Yeah. And how do you fix that?
I mean, I think that
is it impossible at this point?
No, it's not. Like,
there's only three more games.
Rose knows this, and I think that's how he's tried to fix it. I know I've hit with Anson so hard, but that seems to be how he's tried to fix us defending the three. And it's worked for two games. Hopefully that wasn't an anomaly, that Anson's defense really does just change our whole defensive perspective and that we can defend threes all of a sudden.
Also, I feel like, again, I've mentioned this, but Luke Worthington has added it's like, wow, like, if I'm going to play and see time on the floor, Eric Mika,
yeah,
I've got to be tough. Right?
No, he's played tough. He's brought
and that's what I'm saying is like when Luke plays tough, it makes Eric play tough.
Yeah. And Eric's had two great games where he's played aggressive as he did at the very start of the year.
No, and I think he was a big key to that Gonzaga win as well.
Oh, totally. Anyway. He was going after those guys. Yeah, no, I agree. I don't know besides that. Free throws is tough. I think that's kind of unfixable other than I don't know. I want Collinsworth out of the game in close moments at the end. Yeah. Because he just looks, A, he misses them, but B,
okay, give me
he
your clutch.
Plays hot potato when he has that ball and because he's scared to get fouled at the end. So anyway, what were you going to ask me?
Give me your clutch free throws power rankings right now.
Number one, Haas, of course.
Yeah.
Number two, I'm going to go Halford.
Okay.
Number three, Anson.
Anson Winder, yeah.
And then number four, I am going probably Carlino.
Yeah.
But that's not fun when you're number four is in the 60%.
Yeah, 68, 69.
Yeah, 68, I think. But yeah, and then after that, it's just scary.
There's five guys on the floor, Tosh. We've got to play one that's scary.
Yeah.
Right? Hey, yeah.
Carlino's 60% scary. So we got to play two that's scary.
Right. Well, and we also have seen him miss.
He's hit big free throws, but he's missed.
He's hit big ones, but he's also missed big free throws.
He's gone
and
missed two, you know, so.
Anyway, all right. Well, so I got thinking about that, and since we're playing San Diego, I feel like there's a really good. It's another opportunity to see if we can remedy some of the stuff that's killed us all year. Guarding the three, shoot some free throws, rebound. That's it. This team can score. They're gonna score.
Totally.
Like, you know, it's just a question of whether or not they'll be able to handle that. And then, of course, that'll lead us into the West Coast Conference tournament where BYU will hope to be a 2 seed if they get by San Diego. Your predictions? Do you think that we can go down to JCP, Jenny Craig Pavilion.
Okay.
And grab the W, which is something that Zags weren't able to do.
So I actually...
Only four teams in conference have done that.
I have more confidence this year that we could win the tournament than I have in recent memory.
That's freaking nuts. But I'm just saying, like, it's really nuts, though.
Yeah.
That just shows you. What do you mean in recent memory? Didn't you feel like we had a chance to win the conference tournament when Jimmer Fredette was a senior?
Yeah. But no, actually. Once Davies went out, I was not confident right. We were going to beat San Diego.
You're right.
And we ended up not even losing to San Diego. We lost to a different team in the tournament, I think. No, maybe it was San Diego.
No, we lost in the finals to San Diego.
So either way, yeah, it's been a long time that I've had confidence going in, but I think this team could win it. But that, if I put a percentage, I would say there's a 52% chance.
Well, see, this is what's so weird about it, is because after watching Pangos basically throw up all over himself against BYU and then at San Diego last week, I tweeted out, I said, if Kevin Pangos ends up being conference player of the year, it's a crime. I know that Gonzaga is going to win, conference championship, but Tyler Haas has been the conference player of the year.
No doubt in my mind. And so if Pangos won it, it's solely because his team was the number one team and he was the best player on that team. But I would not trade Pangos for Haas.
No way. I wouldn't either. And so that's kind of interesting. And then if Carlino is really doing some smart and savvy stuff and Collinsworth, it's like suddenly we've got three guys on the floor who are, what, among the top five, top 10 players in conference? Top five?
And
what do you think? Top six?
Top seven. Oh, let's go seven. But I think Mika can, when Mika's on, it's debatable for top 10 in the conference.
How did we finish second this year?
Yeah, it's sad. It really is. That's the other thing I'm at, is that it's our lot. We have some embarrassing losses. Like no way around it. Games that we had no place losing.
Loyola Marymount.
Yeah. Horrible. They're horrible.
Yeah. The other one, if we're two seed, it looks like we'll play the winner of Loyola Marymount in Portland.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
We've lost, but we got to like that. We got to like playing those teams. Yes.
Yeah.
So the question we got to talk about is that, do you think that we are in the tournament right now?
Yes.
I agree. What would be your ideal seed? Not ideal might be the wrong word. That would be one. But what's your ideal realistic seed?
Well, there's some beauty to be in the 5-12, right? I mean,
it just seems like 12s beat 5s, yeah.
Yeah, I think 12s have beaten a 5. 1-12 has beaten a 5 in every tournament since the turn of the century, right? So 12 seems to be a lucky number, but I don't know. Is there much difference between being a 12, a 13, an 11, or a 10?
No. I don't want to be an 8 or a 9, and so that's...
That 8 or 9 is a coin toss, and it's been a really bad, really bad seeding for BYU.
Yeah.
They don't win.
They always lose when they...
Yeah.
And that's way overthinking.
They always lose basically every time they're in.
Way overthinking things, but if they win the tournament, that's one bad thing that could happen. I could see them making a 9 seed. And then I hate the 8-9 matchup, and that I also... Then they play the number 1 seed the next round. Because here's my other thing. Maybe I'm being way too blue goggles here.
Do it. Do it.
I can see this team winning multiple games in the tournament if we get into the tournament.
Listen, from a historical standpoint, something Tyler Haas needs to do to solidify himself as one of the 10 best ever is there's only a handful of guys who were the best player on their team who then won just one NCAA game. And there's only... there's only two guys in history who've ever been the best player on their team and have won multiple NCAA games.
Yeah.
Right?
And I'm calling this early, but I could see this as a strong possibility that we could be a Sweet 16 team. If we can get into the tournament, I think we can play with almost everybody in the country. And so I think we get in there, I think you could see us winning two games.
Mm.
And boy, would that just be an awesome thing for this team. The end of the year, we already have so much recruiting, I think, momentum, that would just be another just awesome shot to the arm
right.
for
and
the
we,
program.
We won't go too far down that road, but things are looking pretty exciting going forward. I it's kind of strange that we're in the same spot. You know, we just lost Brandon Davies, who's ended up being an NBA player. Added Eric Mika. That was kind of the turnover. We also added Kyle Collinsworth. So you place Zylstra and Craig Cusick, the immortal Brock Zylstra and Craig Cusick, and you replace them with some of the guys that we put in, and then also you replace Sharp started most of last year, now Austin's there and stuff. The point is, it's kind of interesting, though, record-wise, we're in the same spot. Strength of schedule is a little bit tougher. RPI is a little bit better this year. But same record. We finished the regular season 21-10 last year. If we beat San Diego, 21-10 again after losing an NBA player. That just speaks to kind of the quality of what we're bringing in and replacing.
If this year's team played last year's team on a neutral court of the Marriott Center, that who would win that game?
Okay, so junior year Haas is better than junior year or sophomore year Haas, right?
Yeah. Really, the big matchup difference is
Mika versus Davies.
Yeah.
Collinsworth versus Zylstra.
That's where, yeah.
That's a bad one for the other group.
Yep.
I don't know. Who stays on the floor longer, Mika or Davies?
Mika. Rhodes should have been doing this philosophy of fouls with last year with Davies.
With Brandon, yeah.
Davies would try two. In the first 5 minutes, he would be trying to pick someone's pocket at the free throw, at the three-point line twice in the first five. He would get reaching fouls from the three-point line multiple times. I love Davies. Don't get me wrong, but that's my only complaint against
him. Yeah, no, this year's team beats him.
I think so, too. And so
this year's team beats him.
And I bring that up because last year we had the same record, and we didn't get into the tournament.
Yeah.
But I just think if
But last year, you remember I said that the San Diego State was the at-large team that had the most amount of losses that got in.
Yeah.
And they had nine losses, and their RPI was 31.
Okay.
Well, that just shows you BYU has put themselves in a really precarious spot.
Yeah. From a win loss. We have more losses than any at large team that got in last year.
That's right.
But from an RPI standpoint, we're good, and this year's bubble is weaker.
Okay.
As long as we don't fall on our face Saturday, tomorrow, then I feel like we're in a good spot to make it in.
I agree. And I hope that they handle themselves. I also don't think they can lose a first-round game, right?
Yeah, agreed.
So, yeah, even then, I think they probably need to make a run to the finals.
I think if we win this last game of the season and we win one game in the tournament, I feel like we're an at-large. But I'd rather, of course, win more just to make myself feel better about that prospect.
Okay. Well, it's been a lot of fun this year, and obviously, the game against San Diego, we didn't break it down that much, but we feel pretty good about it, right? As long as we can kind of neutralize. I mean, I know that they're more than Johnny D, but they're basically Johnny D.
Yes.
Right? And so as long as you can do something about him, and then...
That's what the breakdown comes down to me, is defending the three-point line, specifically Johnny D. That is the game plan.
All right, I'm on board with it. I think BYU ends up with a win. They lock up the 2 seed. We're number 2, baby.
First time in WCC history.
Go Cougars and enjoy the game.